Mansur found that Verity was avoiding him assiduously. She would not even glance in his direction. Whenever he came close to her, she turned all her attention on her father or the caliph. He saw how she looked on Dorian in a changed light now that she knew he was her uncle. She stared into his face and watched his eyes when he spoke to her. She followed his every gesture with attention, yet she would not even glance in Mansur's direction. During the afternoon's hunt, she would not allow him to separate her from her father, but rode close at Sir Guy's side. In the end, Mansur was forced to contain himself until the evening meal. He was not hungry, and it seemed interminable. Only once did he catch Verity's eyes, and with a tilt of his head asked a silent question of her. She arched an eyebrow enigmatically and gave him no reply. When at last the caliph dismissed the company, Mansur escaped to his own tent with relief. He waited until all was quiet, for he knew that even if she intended to keep the assignation, she would not move before then. That night there was a restless feeling in the camp, with men passing back and forth, loud voices and singing. It was well after midnight before Mansur could leave his own tent and start for the temple. Istaf was waiting for him beside the stone doorway. "Is all well?" Mansur asked. Istaf came closer and whispered,
"There are others abroad this night." "Who are they?" "Two men came out of the desert while the caliph and his guests were at dinner. They hid themselves in the horse lines. When the English effendi and his daughter left the company, the girl did not go to her own tent, as she did last night. Instead, she went with her father to his. Then the two strangers came secretly to them."
"They are set on mischief?" Mansur demanded with horror. "Was Verity to die as his own mother had? Under the assassin's blade?"
"No," Kumra assured him quickly. "I heard the effendi greet them when they entered, and they are together still."
"You're certain you've never seen these men before tonight?"
"They are strangers. I do not know them."
"How are they dressed?"
"They wore Arab robes, but only one was Omani."
"How did the other look?"
Kumra shrugged.
"I saw him only for a moment. It is not possible to tell much from a man's face alone, but he was a Ferengi."
"A European?" Mansur exclaimed with surprise.
"Are you sure?"
Istaf shrugged again.
"I am not sure, but so it seemed to me."
"They are still in the tent of the consul? Is the woman with them?" Mansur demanded.
"They were all still there when I came to meet you here."
"Come with me, we must not be seen," Mansur said decisively.
"There are watchmen only on the outer perimeter of the camp," Istaf answered.
"We know where they are, we can avoid them."
Mansur turned back and went quietly down the narrow alley the way he had come. He made as if he was returning to his own tent, then ducked behind a pile of ancient masonry and waited there until he was certain they had not been seen or followed. Then he and Istaf crept up silently behind Sir Guy's pavilion. There was light within, and Mansur could hear voices. He recognized Verity's. She was speaking to her father, clearly translating.
"He says that the rest will arrive within the week."
"A week?" Sir Guy's voice was louder. "They should have been ready at the beginning of the month."
"Father, lower your voice. You will be heard throughout the entire camp."
For a while their voices sank to a soft mumble, and they spoke with suppressed urgency. Then another voice spoke in Arabic. Even though it was so low and muted that he could not make out the words, Mansur knew he had heard it before. But where and when he could not be sure. In a barely audible whisper, Verity translated for Sir Guy, and his voice rose again sharply.
"He must not even think of it now. Tell him it could dash all our plans. His private concerns must wait until afterwards. He must restrain his pugnacious instincts until the main business has been taken care of."
Mansur strained his ears, but could catch only snatches of what followed. At one stage, Sir Guy said,
"We must sweep up the whole shoal in our net. We must not allow a single fish to slip through."
Then, abruptly, Mansur heard the strangers take leave of him. Once again, the familiar Arab voice tugged at his memory. This time it whispered the formal words of farewell.
"I know him," Mansur thought.
He was certain of this, but still could not place him. The second stranger spoke for the first time. His stuff had been correct. This was a European speaking Arabic with a German or a guttural Dutch accent. He could not remember having heard it before. He ignored it and tried to concentrate instead on exchanges between Sir Guy and the Arab. There was silence, and he realized that the strangers had left Sir Guy's pavilion as quietly as they had come. He jumped up from where he was crouched and ran to the corner of the tent wall. Then he had to shrink back, for not 10 paces away Sir Guy and Verity were standing at the entrance talking quietly and looking in the direction in which their visitors had gone. If Mansur and Istaf tried to follow, Sir Guy would spot them. Father and daughter remained in the doorway for some minutes longer before they went back inside. By this time the strange visitors had vanished among the closely huddled pavilions of the encampment. Mansur turned to Istaf, who was close behind him.
"We must not let them get away. Search the far side of the camp down towards the river and see if they went that way. I shall take the northern perimeter."
He broke into a run.
Something about the stranger's voice had filled him with a sense of foreboding. "I have to find out who that Arab is," he thought.
When he reached the last ruined buildings, he saw two of the night watchmen standing together in the shadows cast by the wall. They were leaning on their jezails and talking quietly. He called to them.
"Did two men pass this way?"
They recognized his voice and ran to him.
"No, Highness, no man passed us."
It seemed that they had been awake and alert, so Mansur had to believe them.
"Shall we raise the alarm?" one demanded.
"No," Mansur said. "It was nothing. Return to your post." The strangers must have gone towards the river. He ran back through the dark camp and in the moonlight saw Istaf running back towards him along the causeway. He sprinted to meet him and called to him while still far off.
"Have you found them?"
"This way, Highness."
Istaf's voice was harsh with exertion. Together they raced down the hillside. Then Istaf turned off the path and led Mansur towards a clump of thorn trees.
"They have camels," he gasped.
As he said it, two riders burst from the clump of trees. Mansur came up short and stood panting, gazing after them as they rode diagonally across the hillside below him. They passed not more than a pistol shot from where he stood. Their mounts were both beautiful racing camels and carried bulky saddlebags and water bags for a desert crossing. They were ghostly in the silvery moonlight, moving away in uncanny silence towards the open desert. In desperation, Mansur bellowed after them, "Stop! In the Caliph's name I order you to halt!" Both riders turned swiftly in their high saddles at the sound of his voice. They stared back at him. Mansur recognized them both. He had not seen the man with the European features, whom Istaf had called the Ferengi, for some years. However, it was the Arab who commanded his attention. He had thrown the hood of his cloak upon his shoulders, and for a fleeting moment the slanting rays of the moon struck full into his face. He and Mansur stared at each other for a heartbeat. Then the Arab leaned forward over the neck of his camel and with the long riding stick he carried, urged it into the long, elegant gait that covered the ground at an astonishing speed. His cloak billowed behind him as he whirled away down the valley with his Ferengi companion riding hard behind him. A shock of recognition and disbelief paralyzed Mansur's legs. He stood and stared after them. Then black thoughts swirled through his head and seemed to batter his senses like the flapping wings of vultures, until at last he rallied himself. "I must get back to my father and warn him of what is afoot," he thought. But he waited while the camels dwindled into the distance, flitting like moths across the moonlit landscape, and then were gone. Mansur ran all the way. He had to stop in the shadow of the walls to regain his breath. Then he went on swiftly but quietly among the tents so as not to raise the alarm. There were two sentries at the door to the Caliph's, but at a quiet word from Mansur they sheathed their swords and stood aside to let him pass. He went through into the inner chamber of the pavilion. A single oil lamp was burning on a metal tripod that shed a soft light.
"Father!" he called.
Dorian sat up from his sleeping mat. He wore only a light loincloth, and his naked body was slim and muscled, like an athlete's, in the lamplight.
"Who is it?" he called.
"It is Mansur."
"What ails you at this hour?"
Dorian had recognized the urgency in his tone.
There were two strangers in our camp this night. They were with Sir Guy.
Who were they?
I recognized them both. One was Captain Kurtz from the garrison at Good Hope, the man who pursued Jim across the wilderness.
Here? In Oman?
Dorian came fully awake. It does not seem possible. Are you certain?
I am even more certain of the other man. His face is graven upon my mind until the day I die.
Tell me, Dorian commanded.
It was the assassin, Kadim ibn Abu Bakr, the swine who murdered my mother.
Where are they now?
Dorian's voice was harsh.
They fled into the desert before I could confront them.
We must follow at once. We cannot let Kadim escape again.
The glazed pink knife scar on Dorian's chest caught the lamplight as he reached for his robes.
They are mounted on racing camels, Mansur answered. We have none, and they are headed into the dunes. We can never hope to catch them in the sands.
Nevertheless, we must try.
Dorian raised his voice and shouted for the guards.